Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Ramatirtha. Ramatirtha took sannyas in 1976 and is a medical doctor and therapist. Ramatirtha is the founder and director of Osho Uta Institute in Cologne, which is one of the oldest and biggest European Osho meditation centers. I'm so happy to have Ramatirtha on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Ramatirtha, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. I'm good this morning. I'm here in India right now, taking some time off from the West and whatever the West brings with it. And I'm enjoying a space to just be on my own and alone.
Okay. So to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
When I started studying medicine, I had to do some work in the hospitals and I became aware that it was not so much about healing people, but enabling them to function again. So I was kind of disappointed and I was looking for ways how you do not only make people function, but how they can become healthy or whole again. So in that context, I got to know the methods of the humanistic psychology, as was the rebirthing, bioenergetics and all of this. And in that context, I got to know the active meditations from Osho. And I was totally turned on to them because I felt there is a freedom. I can do them alone. There is nobody who tells me what is right and what is wrong. And they're an incredible method and way to come into contact with what is there in the body, contrary to, let's say, psychoanalysis, which is more acting in the field of mind and memory, and the same thing is stored in the body. So with dynamic meditation, I felt it's an amazing way to be able to break free from the conditioning and the past. And then at a certain point, I got interested in the man who created those meditations. There was a rumor he would be dying soon. So I decided to finish the semester in the university. And then in February 76, I flew to Pune to meet the man.
What I would like to discuss today with you is Osho Uta, because after you met Osho, I understand that at some point he asked you specifically to go back to Germany and open a meditation center. And I believe that you were not very convinced because probably you thought, oh, I don't have enough money, it's a bit half, and I don't know how to do it. But eventually you managed to create something that is going to turn 40 years in 2020, which is a remarkable achievement. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as you already mentioned, that was my first leaving Darshan after I took sannyas in February. By the end of March, I was going back to Germany. And at those days, you had a leaving Darshan. And then Osho did explain to me, he asked me to open up a center at first he asked me to help my people there, but I was the only sannyasin in that time in the city. So he said, you open up a center, and I denied. There were the doubts that you were speaking about. And he explained to me why it is helpful in a certain way to disengage from the self-centeredness, trying to resolve your own problems, because if you are too focused, you get tense. While when you are with others, there is a distance. And from that distance, you can look at the problems of human mind that are the same as yours. And by helping others, you help yourself. So from that perspective, I came back to Germany. And yet at that time, then I first decided to finish my studies. And then finally in 1980, the whole thing happened after I turned 30 years then I started the center and I found a place, and it was an amazing change in my life because I kind of was vaguely staggering around, not really knowing which direction to take. And the moment the center opened up, my whole energy could go into it.
I visited together with Chetna Osho Uta approximately 5 years ago. And the first thing that we noticed is that it's in the middle of Cologne. So it's an urban meditation center. The most successful centers are normally in the countryside, like, you know, Osho Risco, Osho Miasto. So your model is slightly different. And unfortunately, many cities like London, for example, which is the biggest metropole in Europe, or ex-Europe actually now, but for example, in London, there is not even a proper Osho meditation center. So your model clearly works well, because, you know, Osho Uta has grown over the years and going strong. What's the secret of your success?
That's a great question. I don't really know. I can tell you the one secret was, of course, when we started, or when I started in 1980, Osho said, start a small beginning and call your friends. And that's what I did. And what evolved was an incredibly alive and juicy connection in the people that came to the center. And immediately there was also a clarity that we did not only want to meditate together, that also we wanted to live and to work together. And from that, there was an incredible attraction for people to come and be there in the center. So after 1 year, there were already, I think, 20 people there. And from there, it developed into something like it created a central focus in the city. We opened up the first restaurant, the Zorba the Buddha restaurant. And we did not open it up because we wanted to do business. It was really, we needed a place where we could hang out and meet and celebrate. And then 1 year later, it happened that we opened up a discotheque, which also was because we wanted to do our parties without the neighbors being upset about the noise. So it was just the young people having an incredible drive and enjoyment and opening up. We were like 25, 26, 30 years old. And it was a focal point for the city where people came to enjoy themselves, especially as we changed the whole environment and the whole way of, let's say, running a discotheque. The focus there was dancing. The focus there was celebration. And from there, it took off. And I mean, after 4 years, there were 350 people in that commune.
When we visited the center 5 years ago, we were very impressed by its quality, the facilities, the program, the richness, and also the amount of people. It was full, alive, lots going on. Our idea at the time when we came to visit was because we wanted to learn from you and see what's going on, because we really wanted to open an Osho Meditation Center in London. So what would be your advice for someone who wants to open an Osho Meditation Center in a city?
Ooh, that's a difficult question. I think it completely depends on the situation. I think today it would almost not possible to create something like this because it needs incredible amounts of money to start something like this. And actually, I think that the driving force why the Uta developed in such a way was the master was in the body. And from there, the whole love that was directed towards Osho expressed itself in the establishment, in the working of the center. So a lot of people put in their energy without payment, without asking for wages. And it was such an energy of sharing yourself that from the financial side, it was much more easy to build it up and to let it grow. And we were very, very lucky in many ways. We found a place, we could rent the place, later we could buy the place. I think today it is a very, very difficult situation to create this kind of attitude where people would come to give rather than to take something. So it very much depends on the person and on the situation if you want to create a center. I think what made UTA grow into that, what it is now, it was that for the longest time, it was the living master that fueled the whole process. After Osho's death, for me, it was like, in a way, through Osho's death, not much changed in the sense that I felt his presence, and it was even in a way to let go of that attachment to his body, that in that moment I realized now he is everywhere. He is not confined to the body. And that helped also to go through the difficult times after he left the body and to go through all the changes that happened after Osho's leaving the body. So we could kind of still thrive on that energy of the love for Osho. And I think that would be the most important is incentive for people to start a center, that they kind of have a source there in their own meditation and in their own understanding of meditation. And from there, you will get the energy and the support from existence to run and open up such a place.
So if I can summarize briefly, you are saying that the two most important elements are love for Osho, energy connection with the master, and money.
And the devotion for each individual that is there to transform and to look into yourself. From there, that is the thriving energy. If you want to look at it as a business, it is not enough. It will not work that way. You will have to bring in really, really your own decision or your own quest for truth or whatever you want to call it.
Beautiful. That's great advice. Normally, for anything, a business or a place or a meditation center to survive and thrive over the time, you need to adapt. So I'd love to hear what's changed from the 80s and 90s up to the 20s and 2020, where we're now. How did you adapt to the changing times and people and all of that?
Well, the situation in Cologne was like this, that we were, in a way, a bunch of hippies who started something. You know, we started businesses, not because we wanted to business, but we wanted to express and to live. And as the whole thing was growing more and more, there was also a need to kind of professionally be able to look at a business. So we needed to learn about taxes. We needed to learn about business itself. And in a way, that has changed, that there is the necessity for a professional kind of management in certain ways. And the balance is, on the one hand side, you're running a business, which requires to be in the marketplace. And on the other hand, not to lose, to forget or to lose contact to the heart, which is actually in the very center of the whole place. Sometimes that is a conflicting interest, you know. It's like, of course, you would want to support everybody, but if the money is not there to do that, you will have to find ways to make sure that the business can survive.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When it comes to people, I'm interested to know if new people, especially young people, when they come to Osho UTA, do they come because they're thirsty for Osho, or they come for other reasons?
They are thirsty for meditation. That's really amazing. Actually, they are not so much interested in Osho. They get interested in Osho, But it's an amazing, especially recently, the last 4 or 5 years, we have a lot of younger people coming. There was a time I was kind of worried about it because it was all the old sannyasins hanging out, and we were kind of looking how is this is going to work. And then suddenly young people started coming, and they have a very unique and amazing way to be interested in meditation, to become interested in Osho. They come to the evening meditation. They come to the satsang on Sunday mornings, but their approach is very different. It's not so much focused on the person itself, but they are focused on their own way of living and their own desire to live a life that is worth living. And from there, they also go to other masters, have a look, and then from there they come back to Uta and they join the meditations. And we even have a little group of young people. We call them the youngsters, and they have created what we call a meditation lab. So they meet once a week, maybe twice a week sometimes, and they run their own meditations and they do experiments, and we give them the room just like that. So they are more explorative. They are less focused on, let's say, the guru, but they are focused on a quality that is the quality of acceptance and of inviting to realize your own potential and to live a life that you really enjoy living. And they find this quality of yes and of acceptance. And that, I think, is the most important part of it.
I think if you manage to attract young people, it means that you're doing something very positive and good. Any place who doesn't have young people is going to die. On the other hand, personally, I feel like I'm compelled to live my life in a way where I want to share and pass on this fire and love for Osho, not just for meditation in general, because that's my story. That's what happened to me. Even though I never met Osho in the body, that's how I feel. So how do you manage this? Or in your case, do you feel that you want to do that? And somehow, is there anything, or it just happens naturally that people then at some point, some people, they click with Osho?
It happens naturally in their own ways. It is really amazing. I mean, I'm constantly surprised, constantly. There are people that never think of taking sannyas, and there are people that they just simply fall in love. And what I feel inside is this incredible freedom. There is no desire to let's say, have people taking sannyas. This freedom and this incredible pull that the master has is something that is beyond or my control, and it is such a vast space, and people are very, very sensitive to the qualities that Osho has. And often they first come to groups, let's say they do a meditation leader training, or they do some groups, and they taste a quality, and then they suddenly start seeing, wow, that quality is connected to this guy called Osho. And then they start falling in love. It has its own natural flow. One thing they also have an understanding, there is no one outside to teach them. It has something to do with themselves taking the courage to say yes to their own qualities. And this yes is being mirrored through this master.
Beautiful. I love this. You know, it's very heartwarming to hear. So do you have sannyas celebration in Osho Uta? There are many people taking sannyas?
It was really funny. There was a while it was not so many people, but recently, let's say last 2 years, suddenly there are often celebrations. And I myself am amazed that in these celebrations, something happens that has its own magic. I mean, really, I'm a shy person, basically. You will not believe it, but in a way I am, because sannyas is also something so intimate, so individualistic, that I don't want in any way ever to step into one's own boundaries and do something. But in that celebration of the sannyas, suddenly something opens up and there is that these barriers or this, the one who gives, the one who takes, it all doesn't matter. There is just joy and celebration and a depth of a quality that you connect to the essential qualities of the person that takes sannyas. And that has become more recently. Yes.
It's like an Osho resurgence, something in the air.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so I would like now to change gear and talk about the Osho trademark issue. I'm aware that you have been involved in a court case and prolonged legal dispute regarding the trademark of the name Osho. Can you explain what happened and your point of view, your reasons and motivation for taking this big task up?
Yeah, that's, as I said already, when Osho left the body, for me, it was something where I never felt abandoned, or I still felt the connection as much as before. It was really, I was surprised myself. At that time, I was thinking of moving to Pune and was kind of gearing up to collect money and to prepare. And then suddenly there he was not there anymore. And it was always a conflict in my life to, on the one hand side, wanting to be physically close to the master, and on the other hand side, to run the center in Cologne. So after Osho left the body, we were using the name Osho just as we did before, and there was never ever a kind of legal agreement or a legal bond or any signature that needed to be done. And then suddenly it was, for the first 7 years, the name was free. There was no trademark whatsoever. But then suddenly, behind the backs of the sannyasins, the trademark was registered. And it was done in a very, very tricky way, because they could never have registered the name if they had not done it behind the back of people, because the name was being used. And as long as the name is being used by others, you cannot register the name like that, because we could have shown we are using it since, let's say, how many years, and nobody could register the trademark. So it was done in a very cunning way, and also in a way that I experienced as misusing a trust that was given to the people that Osho had put into power. And suddenly they registered the trademark, and there was a very clear strategy behind it. They wanted to take control of all the centers. And there were some reasons that did make sense, in that they didn't want people to change the meditations, that they wanted to protect Osho's name. But altogether, suddenly it started taking the form of a church, where you have to go to Pune to be able to run the center, and it will be in the hand of people there that function like a Vatican. And I was kind of shocked about this way how this registration happened. And what I was shocked about is that suddenly the talk was that Osho wanted a trademark. And this was definitely a big, big lie. It was not like that. So it was like I started to meet with the people. I started to say, this is not okay. But then you are put in a legal bond as running a center. Suddenly you have to justify, or you have to sign, and you lose the freedom. And I was very upset about the lying that was going on. And I felt the trademark of the trademarking the name is Osho is totally ridiculous. That made also me decide to attack the trademark. There was one personal experience in Oregon under the regime of Sheila, where a lot of people did not stand in their own strength and in their own possibility to say no and take responsibility, rather than they decided to give away the responsibility. And that's how the whole regime in Pune, in Oregon, could happen. And me, having the experience of, as a German, of what happens when a crowd of people gives away responsibility, I felt at a certain point, if I don't object to this trademark, I will not be able to look into the mirror in a certain point of my life. So that's why I went against the trademark. And I didn't kind of really like it, but I felt there was a need to do this. So at least to open my mouth and say, this is not right. Then from there, it took really many, many turns. And the procedure in Europe was incredibly long and painful, because it also costs a lot of money. And then one point that kind of really freaked me out, I have to admit this, that suddenly in the papers that were given to the court, they appeared a will of Osho, which after 23 years, it had never been mentioned before. And there was that in that will, Osho consigned the rights to his works to the Osho Foundation Europe. And as it turned out, it was clear that this will was a fake. And I was speechless. To be honest, I could not believe that these people would go and fake an Osho will. So that actually gave another heat and turn in the fight. And finally, this will did not matter in the legal procedure, but we lost the case. But for me, it was more about that I had the courage to speak up and to open my mouth and say that this is not what Osho wanted, at least as far as I could understand and see it.
I see. Thank you for clarifying your point of view. And in terms of, I'm sure that all these documents and the court case is available to the public. But if you were to summarize, what was the basic reason why the court ruled in favor of the trademark?
The basic reason was that they said that this is not a generic name, and it was just legal arguments that the name is not protected as a religious freedom or as a religious person, and therefore they said it can be trademarked. That is a very simple explanation. That is the basic reason that finally, the argument was rejected. I remember that one of the last things that happened in Brussels, the lawyer of the Osho Foundation, he made a very particular statement saying that Osho has nothing to do with meditation. It was really, it sounded such an incredible joke. But in legal terms, it is right. Osho, the name, has nothing to do with meditation, and it is a very, very strict way of looking at it from a business point of view. That was very different in America, where the question of religious freedom has a much more greater importance than in Europe. In America, they decided against making it a trademark. That's why in America, Osho is not a trademark name. But in Europe, the aspect of religious freedom did not matter enough. And they decided, no, it can be trademarked.
If I understand correctly, the trademark is in the name of Osho as a person. So technically, I can trademark my own name, Francesco.
I think Francesco would not be enough. You would have had both the names.
No, but what I mean is, like, you can trademark a name of a person, you know, if that's the logic of the court case, which it's the first time I hear that.
Yes, no, you can do that. Yeah.
I see. Okay. So how do you feel about that now? And is there any chance of a positive resolution or reconciliation?
For me, when I got the result that finally, after I think 5 years of litigation, the trademark was kind of accepted by the European High Court, I was, of course, disappointed, but at the same time, I was also very happy that the whole thing was over. And there will be no point of reconciliation. I'm happy that I did what I had to do because I wanted to regain, or I wanted to maintain my self-respect. And for the rest of it, things will go the way they go. And you know that when the master is out of the body, soon people are there who want to create a church, who want to benefit from the business point of view, and who want to take control. It was the same in the situation with Sheila, where she wanted to start with the whole trademarking. And they continued. And that is the game that is going on whenever there is a master out of the body. Their disciples will play the game. In that way, there is no reconciliation. Osho talks about it himself, that there is a so-called esoteric group, which will kind of look for the essential teachings of the master, and that there is an exoteric group that will try to create whatever you call it, a church or a business or some outer manifestation. And these polarities are simply there.
Every time a master leaves the body, it's always difficult and confusing. We've seen that all the time throughout the history. So there is nothing new and extraordinary with Osho, what we are seeing now. Okay, so we are heading towards the end, and I have three final questions for you. So the first question is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
That changes. At the moment, actually, my first thing is I'm doing yoga in the morning. But recently, like before I came to India, I quite often do dynamic meditation, because like the West is so mad and neurotic. And for me, to this whole element of letting go of control and just to then with a stop to return back to the silence, to the essential qualities, that for me is very important, because in the madness you can get lost so easily. So it is always something in the mornings where I take the time to find my own ground within myself. And then I have whatever, my breakfast or something, and then already the meetings and the routine starts.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
I can honestly say my favorite meditation is the dynamic meditation. It is such an unbelievable instrument. It has such an, and you can do it with so many different aspects. You know, you can do it under the therapeutical aspect, you can do it under the esoteric aspect of returning to the silence. The stop is such a crucial point in this. It's really, for the modern man, I think there is nothing there that is so efficient, and so it can take you out of this whole madness within such a short time, you know. And the other is the sitting silently, to be honest. You know, sitting silently, just simply stopping, not trying to get anywhere, but simply to relax within myself.
Okay, so the last question is, you lead the Osh experiment. You are one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
A big, big love affair. Just amazing to be with Osho. I can't say it otherwise.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much, Ramatirtha. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks for sharing your insight and your story with Osho, with Osho Uta, again, what you have done, and you and all the sannyasins around you in Cologne is absolutely remarkable. It's a thriving center, 40 years old, and you get young people, and it's in a city, which is even more difficult in many ways compared to having another center in the countryside. Probably the only urban meditation center that is fully functioning in the whole of Europe, as far as I'm aware. There are a few others, but not the same scale as yours. Mm-hmm. And then also thank you for bringing clarity from your point of view on the trademark issue. I appreciate on a personal level what you have done. You said that you wanted to stand up and take the courage to do it, and that's has to be honored whenever someone does something like that. So thank you, Ramatirtha, and I hope we can meet in person one day.
I thank you, and I wish you all the best for your work.
Thank you. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much, 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 much.